Welcome everyone to the Sister Stories podcast. The aim of this podcast is to marvel at God's sovereignty over each of our lives as women and to encourage one another by sharing our stories. My name is Sophie and today I'm joined by Sadie.
Hello, hi.
And welcome. So first of all, can you tell us a little bit about who you are?
I'm Sadie. I'm married. I have three children. I'm a teacher, but I've also done other things, like I've had my own business and my husband and I also run a business. Nice. And I've been a Christian since I was six.
Wow. Okay, yeah. Great. So we're going to talk a little bit about how you became a follower of the mm-hmm. Lord Jesus.
Yep.
But can you start by telling us a bit about your family and how you grew up?
So I'm British born Chinese, BBC we call it. And I come from a family of five children. My mum brought us up on her own. So my father passed away when I was six, turning seven, mm-hmm. From liver cancer. And so it was a single parent family from a very young age.
Yeah.
And it was quite a difficult childhood in the sense that we didn't have a lot of money. My mum struggled with five young children. She was pregnant at the time. So there were four of us and she was pregnant with my youngest brother who never met my dad. We are Chinese, but brought up in a Western culture, so that had some issues as well, mm-hmm. Some difficulties for me growing up. But also, we started going to church after my father passed away,
right.
And been going to church ever since.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about what happened with your father? And
My dad was very healthy. He was actually a chartered accountant with his own business, and he had he was also a Kung Fu teacher, so he used to teach martial arts. Mm-hmm. So he was very fit and healthy, and really sort of like the life and the laughter of our family.
Mm.
At the age of 32, he got liver cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I was six, turning seven, and we were, it was a changed our lives completely.
Mm.
He passed away at a very young age, but his legacy is that my whole family, we're all Christians, and, all of my siblings, we have 18 children between us, and mm-hmm. we're all Christians and we all follow Jesus. Yeah.
That's great. So can you tell us about his conversion? What happened?
So what happened with him is, my grandparents were Christians. I don't really know their story, to be honest, but they were Christians, and they would come to our house when we were children, mm-hmm. and they would come and pray with us and sort of, I just remember them making us all sit down and pray, and we used to find it really boring, really tedious, and we just didn't understand any of it. But we just do it just because they were our grandparents. And my dad and my mum didn't believe. But then when my dad got sick, I think it changed things for him.
Mm.
The pastor of my grandparents' church went to visit him, and he basically accepted Christ when he was dying. And he told my mum that he wanted her to start taking us to church. That was his dying wish. He wanted her to take us to church, the four of us and the baby that she was pregnant with. And we used to go to a Chinese school on Sunday mornings, which we also hated. he asked her to do that, and she promised him.
Mm-hmm.
And he died very quickly and painlessly, which was a real blessing.
Mm.
But he did have a moment where he told my mum and my grandparents that he saw angels standing around his bed, and he wasn't afraid to die. I think he was, he had accepted Jesus and he knew where he was going.
Mm.
And so after that, my mum took us all to church faithfully. Every week she would drive us in this big Volvo. Ever since then, we've been going to church, and
mm-hmm.
we've all given our lives to Jesus, and we all have families now. And I said, she has great 18 grandchildren,
mm-hmm.
and that's my dad's legacy. All go to church, we all serve, and we're all, believers.
Mm, that's great. Did you get a chance to ask your dad before he passed away about his faith? No, quite young, obviously.
I was only six, turning seven. I don't really remember much. I actually didn't even see him when he was in hospital. He mm-hmm. was only there for a short time. He'd had one bout of chemotherapy,
mm-hmm.
and I think after that my mum said that his body was wasted, and he just he was gone very quickly after that. We never saw him. It was my grandparents that told us, and I remember feeling it was really strange, because it just felt really, I didn't really see him being sick. He was literally not feeling great, hospital and then it was gone. And I remember at the time my pet rabbit had died that summer as well. And I remember feeling that even more, like, it just seemed more real to me. And it just it only became real afterwards when, you know, he wasn't around and we used to sit around a family table crying and,
I wonder what the impact on your mum was. So apart from her, as you said, quite diligently taking you to church as a result, do you think, I mean, maybe again you saw it afterwards, maybe she told you afterwards, but did that have an impact? Did your father's faith have an impact on her questioning things or just seeking the Lord as well?
I think for her, it was a really difficult time for her. You know, she was a single mum, 32 years old, very young, 5 children.
Yes.
But I think she did struggle mentally a lot. You know, she cried a lot and she was very, she was the, what's the word? She wore the pants in the family. She was the one that was the strict one that had all the rules that disciplined us. My dad was the one that was the cuddly one, the who played with us, the fun one.
Yeah.
So actually, you know, I look back on it now and it was tough. She was really, really strict and she had, you know, it was very difficult for her. But I think if it had been the other way round and my dad had been left, I'm not sure he would have coped. She held on to her faith very strongly. I can honestly say my mum is a really strong woman of faith. And until now, she evangelizes everybody she meets. She's very, very strong in her faith. But she's also a very hard, strong woman. But that's what made her able to get through it, I think. I think if she wasn't like that, she would have, you know, collapsed. You know, it's a lot to do. I mean, I have 3 children and I have my husband with me and he's really good and he helps a lot. But she was on her own. And even I sometimes find things hard. So I can't imagine how it would have been for her. So she just held on to her faith in God. And we did have some, you know, the church really helped us. So she started taking us to a church. At the time, it was the Chinese church in London. And we had a Sunday school teacher who really diligently came to our house probably like once a week, once every 2 weeks. He would drive to our house and he would do quiet time with us. And he bought Early Days with Jesus, Tops for me. And he did quiet time with us and gave us quiet time material for several years. And he just did that on his own back. You know, he just did that. And I, you know, his name was Stephen. But we lost contact with him. He got married and then he moved to Australia and we've never been able to find him. But, you know, I always remember him. We all remember him and how good he was. Yeah,
that's great. So was that quite early into you coming to that church, do you think?
It was, I think, because we were so young. So my sister was 8, I was 6, my younger sister was 4 maybe, my youngest brother was 3. And a baby. So we were very young and the church was very supportive to us.
That's great.
It was, the church family was really good to us.
And your grandparents as well, I imagine.
My grandparents, actually, my grandmother died very soon after my father passed. She also got cancer. So after that, they were around for a while, but they weren't in the picture much after that. After my grandmother died, my grandfather remarried and moved away. So we actually didn't really see that side of my family very much after my father passed away, which is very sad. But yeah, that's how it was. Yeah, but my mum's brother came over to England and he moved down the road to support my mum. And that really helped as well. So we did get family support, but it was really tough for my mum. Really tough.
So, do you know if her faith started soon after your father passed away or a bit later maybe?
I don't really know. Yeah. I'm not very sure.
No.
I think she started going to church. Actually, I haven't really asked her that, actually. I've just always, you know, she just started going to church and became a believer and that was it. So I assume it was gradual anyway. Yeah, I don't know. I've never asked her that. She's just always been a Christian and that's been it.
But I guess because you were quite young, didn't you?
I never really questioned any of that.
Of course.
As I got older, I did start questioning a bit more, but I had really strong foundation and I always knew, so I went through a stage when I was a teenager, you know, you always start questioning a bit and you start, you know, a lot more. And there was a stage when I was in my late teens where I was, you know, wondering, do I believe this? And I actually went on a alpha course at Holy Trinity Brompton just to sort of try and find myself again and see if I really, you know, I believed what I'd been believing since I was 6. And actually that was really good. But it was a year when I was really searching and seeking. But I knew in my heart that it's always been true.
Yeah.
It's almost like there's this knowledge in me that I know it's true. There's nothing else that's true. So I've yeah, even when I was going through periods of doubt, I just always clung on to the faith that, yes, this is true and I believe in this.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. So that was the key moments in your teenage years that you questioned things.
Yes, then. That was a year of searching for me. I dropped out of uni for a year because I started taking law.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was doing my A-levels. And so I sort of had no idea what I wanted to do, what I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to take law because coming from a Chinese family, that's always very, you know, encouraged and seen as really good.
Yeah.
So I chose to do law. I went to King's College, started law, but 5 weeks into my degree, I realized this is not for me. I hate this. It's really not for me. And so I dropped out, and it was quite a difficult year because, you know, my mum was really unhappy. She didn't really understand. She spent a lot of money on books.
Of course, yeah.
And,
I can imagine.
Yes. And, you know, because I'd dropped out, you know, 5-6 weeks into it, it was too late for me to change. I tried to change, but it was too late. So in the end, for that year, I spent the year doing maybe 2 or 3 part-time jobs and serving in the church. And then that was when I served in the church. And I did actually quite a lot of work in the children's ministry for about a year. And I did a lot of children's camps. And did lots of teaching, and that's when I thought, actually, maybe I should look into being a teacher. And then when I went back to university, I went to UCL and I did an English degree, and then I went on to do teaching.
And you've taught English or primary
school? No, I taught primary school.
And that's nice. If we move on to more recent times, can you tell us a little bit about what God has taught you over the last few years?
So in the last, 10 years, I've spent a lot of time being a stay-at-home mum. I've also ran my own baking business. And I've only recently gone back to work in teaching.
Right.
I see God working in my life, you know, sometimes in small ways and other times in really sort of like really tangible ways. I mean, one of my most recent experiences was so we've just recently moved house, but we lived in our past house for about 12 years maybe. And when we moved in, we had an elderly neighbor, so she was probably 82 at the time when we moved in, or 80 or something, 82 maybe. And she was lovely. Her name was Barbara, and she, you know, really, you know, we'd chat on a doorstep and she would say hi to the kids. At the time, you know, Joseph, who's my son, he was 3 and my daughter Elise was 1 when we moved in. And so we were neighbours for 12 years and we were just, you know, had a nice friendly relationship. She'd look out for us when we were on holiday, that sort of thing. And we'd chat on the doorstep. But we'd never really gone into each other's houses. I had invited her a few times, but she was always like, oh, no, I don't want to trouble you. Very English. And I didn't really go into her house, except Joseph would go through and collect his ball when he kicked it over the fence. when COVID came, I think it really affected her. And she was very a very lively person, loved going out. She was very independent. She was living on her own. She would go out every day. And then suddenly the fact that she was cooped up inside and couldn't go out really affected her. So during that time, we would, you know, I've always loved baking, so we used to always send her baked goodies. But during that time, I started my baking and sweet treats business, and we would, you know, take over things for her to eat, and she would test them out for me, and we would chat and things. And during that time, once we were allowed to go to each other's houses, she started coming over to our house because she was so lonely, and she'd come and have tea, and we'd do the same. I'd go over and chat every week. I'd pop over twice and sit and have tea and coffee with her. And she knew I was a Christian. She'd always known I was a Christian. So during our chats, she would always sort of say, oh, Sadie, you'll never get me to be a Christian. You know, she was very intelligent. You know, she was 82, but she had all her, you know, her brain was firing. And she would always say, oh, you know, I can't believe in the creation. It's just, you know, it's impossible. And, you know, bad people exist and suffering. And she had all those questions. Sometimes I talk to her about church and sometimes I talk a bit about God, but she would always be like, well, I'm not really interested. And so we wouldn't really talk about it too much. But then towards in 2022, she started falling. So she would fall and then end up in hospital. And then I would go over and help her a lot more. And then towards 2023, I would go over and help her, you know, sometimes make lunch for her, help. We'd always we've been taking her wheelie bin out for her for ages, mm-hmm. and doing her rubbish for her and all sorts of things, odd jobs that we could help her with.
Yeah.
And then was it this year? This year she was, you know, she'd fallen so many times now that she was getting quite poorly and not really able to go out. And she, I went to see her one time and she was really ill. So, you know, I made her some soup and made her some lunch and helped her in bed. And, you know, she was really poorly. And then about a week later, I went back to check on her and she was feeling a bit better. But she said, you know, she just wasn't feeling herself and she'd been feeling not great for a few months now. And as we talked, and then she said to me, you know, Sadie, I don't know why I'm still here. At this point, she was like 96.
Right, yeah.
And she was saying, oh, you know, I don't know why I'm still here. You know, I don't want to be here anymore. She said, you know, my body is useless now and my mind is still really active, but I can't do anything I want to do. Why am I still here? Why can't I die? And I said to her, oh, Barbara, you know, I think it's because you're really stubborn, you know, a stubborn old thing. And God wants you to be his child. He wants you to believe in him. And he's giving you 96 years to do it, but you're just so stubborn. He's got to make it longer. And she sort of said, oh, you know, she suddenly stopped. And for the first time, she actually said, oh, do you think so? And then we talked some more and she talked to me about, you know, why is someone like Putin still around? I don't understand. You know, I really don't understand. And we talked about how, you know, judgment belongs to the Lord. You know, we may not see God's at work. We may not see what's going to happen. But, you know, I said, I believe that, you know, his time is coming. It may not be in our lifetime. And that's the same for anyone. Now, I talked about how Paul's had difficulties with work with his boss and how he was really wronged. But, you know, we've had to let go of that and believe that justice will come from God and we can't seek it ourselves. And she sort of accepted that. And then she said, you know, maybe I can believe in Jesus. Mm. And so I said to her, would you like to pray the sinner's prayer with me and accept Jesus now? You know, I said, you don't need to know everything. All you need to believe in, you know, and I told her about Jesus. Mm. And she said, okay. You know, and so we prayed the sinner's prayer and it was amazing. We prayed the sinner's prayer and halfway through she interrupted and said, you know, she thanked God for us being her neighbours and being been touching her through our love and just witnessing
and
to
very
her.
Very practical things.
Yeah, just practical things, just being a good neighbour. And I didn't bombard her with the gospel. I just, you know, she knew I was a Christian, but, you know, we just showed her love, just daily love. And she thanked God for us. And then I left that day. And this was good. This was on, I think it was the Thursday before Good Friday.
Mm.
And then on Good Friday, I was at home and I said, I've mixed it up a bit. What happened was before I started talking to her about God, the day that she had said that question to me about how she didn't know why she was still alive. And then I hadn't answered her. I had sort of said, oh, okay. But that night I had gone home and I'd talked to Paul and said, you know what, I really feel like I need to talk to Barbara. I feel like God's really convicting me to talk to her. So it was actually the next day, so I've mixed it up. Next day that I went back and told her, talked to her again, and she said the same thing again, and that's when I told her all a bit about God. So actually I wasn't that good, you know, I needed a bit of time to think. So I went home that day after talking to her and she'd prayed the sinner's prayer. And then the next day I said to Paul, oh, I feel like, you know, we should go and see Barbara, all of us, you know, because we promised her once we moved, because we'd moved house in January and she'd been really sad that we'd moved, and we'd said, Paul had, the kids had said, we'll come back and see you, don't worry. I mean, I'd been going back every single week to see her, but they were busy at school and work, so they hadn't. So they said, okay. So Paul came back with me on Good Friday, but she was asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, okay, let's not wake her up and let's go. So we left. And then on Easter Sunday, I said to the kids, let's all go together after church.
Yeah.
So we all went, we bought some flowers for her house and we went to her house and I have the key. So I just knock on the door and go in.
Yeah.
And the house was like kind of in disarray. It was empty. And I was like, oh, what's going on? This is not like Barbara. And then we went into the garden and the neighbour over the fence, who we knew as well, said, oh, she fell on the Saturday and she went into hospital. And we were like, oh my gosh. So then I contacted her family and they said, yeah, she'd fallen. She'd had a bad fall and she was quite poorly. And that she also had, they diagnosed her with COVID and cancer as well. we couldn't really see her. She was sort of under whatever you call it, couldn't see her. And then it was only towards about 2 weeks later that we were able to see her with full PPE and all that. And it was on a Sunday, so we went to see her, but she wasn't really conscious anymore. She hadn't been conscious for a while, wasn't really lucid. And we said goodbye to her. It was very sad. But I remember Paul saying to her, oh, we're going to see you in heaven, Barbara. And she sort of seemed to smile and sort of made a response, some kind of noise. And then my kids said goodbye to her and talked to her. And then literally when we went home on Monday, we heard that she'd passed away that night. So she basically had held on for like about a few weeks until we got to see her one more time. And then she died. Wow. So I fully believe that's, you know, a real testament of God's timing.
Yeah.
How I spoke to her. And then she accepted Christ and then she died. And then I never saw her again. And she was never able to talk to me again. But, you know, I believe that's God's.
Yeah.
That's God at work. There was no other way that.
For sure.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Don't worry. And it's interesting how a very similar thing happened with your dad, didn't it? Because, I mean, we don't know why someone would pass away at a certain time or not.
Yes.
But I think having heard of a few stories like this, actually, very similar with Abre's dad passing away recently.
Yeah.
We just think, in the same way, they could have died any other day, really.
Yeah.
But obviously, we don't know why. And they've just had that one conversation just before they passed away that changed their heart. Or, you know, just the Lord speaks to them just before.
Yeah.
And I think there's a theme there, isn't there? I've recently started to really believe that actually we see people just being very resistant to the gospel. Mm. But actually, the Lord knows their heart. And sometimes maybe just before they pass away that they will turn to him.
Yeah.
But I do suspect that there are many more Christian than we think in heaven.
Yes.
For that very reason, that actually you're in front of death and suddenly you do have to evaluate your life. You do have to think what is coming, actually.
Yes.
And sometimes it's scary.
It is. I mean,
it does cause you to think, doesn't it?
I found it really amazing because we were asked to go to her funeral by her family. It was a really small funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't Christians. They actually didn't know she'd become a Christian, so it wasn't a Christian funeral.
No.
But it really struck me how, when you go to a non-Christian funeral, how it's just, there's no hope.
Mm.
It's just, that's the end. You know, this person lived, let's listen to a song they liked.
Yeah.
That's it.
And there's not much to say as well, is there? Because there's not, unless you want to just praise who they were as a person, but often there's no room for actually saying, yes, they were a sinner.
Yeah.
Yes, there were things that they got wrong, because no one wants to admit that.
Yeah.
But actually, if you are a Christian, you've got that. You can be thankful for God's mercy, even when we are sinners.
Yeah.
And you can rejoice in that.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think Paul and I just left feeling it, it just felt so empty and almost pointless. You know, it's almost like, life is just pointless then. You know, you just live 96 years. And then it's over. And, you know, they say you like dancing, you like this song, you know, you lived through a world war. Actually, she lived through a lot more than that. It's a bit crazy. But it just touched me how much that God was able to use me. I'm just a normal person. I'm not good at evangelizing. But he was still able to use me and, you know, help bring her to Christ. Something I actually thought I would never be able to do because she'd always been so, you know, resistant to it. So it just goes to show that, you know, anyone can come to Christ. And we just have to, I think for us, it was more evangelism through just loving her and being neighborly to her. And you know, there's a different way for everybody.
But at the same time, we're not the ones doing it, are we? So we can't, even through very imperfect actions and words, the Lord can use that, can't he? So
exactly,
yeah, it can be through anything, really.
It's God that does it at the end of the day, and we just have to be. I think for us, we just have to be willing to be used, I guess, and open to serving Him and to saying, okay, use me how you want, God. I fully believe that He was the one that convicted me to talk to her. because I really felt the day before, oh, I really need to talk to Barbara. I just really felt convicted.
Yeah, the spirit prompts us, doesn't it?
Yeah, and actually, I was feeling really sad after she died. I knew she had gone to heaven, but I still felt really sad because, you know, I'd been her neighbour for a long time. And it was really, there was one day when I was sitting on the sofa and I actually felt her, I kind of heard her voice and I heard her say, ah, Sadie, thank you, I'm happy. Mm-hmm. And I just felt she was happy and she's with God now and she's happy. And that's what just really made me kind of almost let go and think, whenever I drive past my old house, though, I'm always a bit like, Barbara.
Of course.
But I'll see her again.
That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
That's joy, isn't it? Yeah. I think if we wrap things up a little bit, what advice would you give to a younger Christian?
I think it's just being open and being willing to... I think... being open and willing to serve God is really important, but also not holding back and thinking, oh, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that. I think God can use anyone. Yeah. I'm nothing special, but God can use anyone, and he can use you to touch other people's lives. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think for us as Christians, especially women, we don't realize sometimes how impactful we are. We think, you know, just a small conversation here or just an encouragement there is no big deal. But actually, to someone, that could be make their day.
Yes.
It could touch someone, and that could be something that's changes their whole perspective on something or changes their life.
Mm.
And I think we shouldn't belittle ourselves sometimes. As women, we're always so busy and we're always taking care of people. But we forget that how important we are, and we think that we're not that important, we're not that significant, but we are.
And God does give us jobs to do and things to do.
Yeah. And no matter what you're doing, there are people that you're touching.
Yes.
There are people that you've got a circle. You've got in our church, we used to call it our oikos, which is the local community. And you are meeting those people every day and touching those people every day. You know, you could be a mum, you know, and there's all the school mums. And that's a whole arena there. And, you know, it's not all confined to, you know, sometimes we just sort of think, oh, it's working at the church, but it doesn't mean that. It means like the community and everyone you touch and you meet.
Yeah, no, exactly. We've got to have that impact on the world, don't we? So
exactly.
Yeah, you can't just stay inwards and stay into the church. Yeah, that's great. Thank you. It was really encouraging to hear how even through a situation with the death of your father, something. Like the Lord brought life to your family, really, through that, and to him, obviously, as well.
Yes.
But that's really striking, actually.
Yeah, we can't always see what's God's plan.
No.
And I think sometimes we need to, you know, we just trust God that, you know, that he's in control and that he's holding everything in his hands. And that even though we can't see the end result, he can, and he's always working for our good.
Yes.
And whether we see it or not, we just have to trust him.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for sharing your story with
us. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, that's great. And thank you for listening, everyone. That's all for today's episode of Sister Stories, but join us again next time.